Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Short Podcast. Will, what is this, number 58?
58.
I don't think we're going to figure it out till we get in the 60s, but we'll do this anyway just as a practice run.
Try our best.
We are getting to the dead of winter here in the Northeast, so we got a little bit of golf stuff to talk about. Some big names teeing off today in their first round of professional competitive golf, even though it was a practice round in a long time, but it's alluding to some great things that are on the horizon. We hope. We've got some news about the Rory Tiger. We'll just touch on that really quickly. It's more sad news than anything else, but I'm sure they'll figure it out. Liv has put out their schedule, and more important for me, ton of college football to talk about. Football stuff to talk about. So where golf is just kind of trickling, holding on for, you know, some stuff here and there, we are in the thick of a phenomenal football part of the year. Last weekend was probably one of the best Saturdays of college football in a long time, as far as just competitive games, upsets, games down to the wire. I mean, that 4th and 31 from Alabama we'll hit on a little bit. Just an incredible, incredible play after one play after another. And then how does that all shake out to the playoffs? So a lot to talk about, Will. I guess we should start with the golf stuff. I mean, let's talk about Tiger teeing it up today. It was pretty cool to see his swing look good.
Yeah, man. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, biggest story in golf is that the guy everybody wants to see is finally back playing professional golf. It's been far too long since we saw him last, and the game looks to be in good shape. I'm of course talking about Will Zalatoris. Forget this Tiger guy. I don't know who's excited about that. No, it's awesome. And you know, Tiger was talking, I think it was on Tuesday, and he said basically he wants to play one event a month this year. He was talking about playing in the Genesis as one of them, you know, finding an event in March, playing in the Masters, obviously. Golf's just better when Tiger's playing. I think that's the bottom line. And it's more interesting to watch. There's always a storyline. He doesn't have to play well. You know, he's a draw on his own. And to have him back, you know, this week in the Hero World Challenge and every so often in the coming year is going to be so much better than what we've been going through kind of since he won the Masters. And, you know, I hope that it's the right schedule to keep him healthy. I hope that it's the right schedule to keep his game in shape. And man, can you imagine if he starts playing well? He's only going to be playing in the biggest events. Like this could be pretty exciting. But man, yeah, I mean, we're all golf fans here. Just seeing Tiger playing on the course, even if it's a practice round, knowing what's coming, I think you got to be pumped about it.
Yeah, I mean, to your point of golf just being better when he's actively playing, it's so true. I mean, it's for him to stop now, it would be one of those stories you look back on to say, man, what if, you know? And I know it happens to a lot of folks in sports with injuries and family stuff or health issues, whatever it is that come up and, you know, shorten people's careers that could have been some of the best of all time. But we're talking about like the GOAT, the guy that basically put golf on his back for a long time. You know, it made it must-see Sundays when he was in it, especially winning, you know, back-to-back-to-back championships and matches. It was just – we may never see a run like that ever again, which is good in the sense that the parity is there. But, man, it's – when you go through a cycle like that, it is awesome to say, man, I was around when that happened. And when Tiger was in his prime, man, golf was never in such a good place. So – just psyched to see him out there. He was saying that his leg felt a lot better this year than it had in, you know, prior years. So to your point, again, I think hopefully the month, if we get a month, an event a month out of him, that would be sick. I mean, I just much, much more than we thought we'd, you know, you asked us 6 months ago, 8 months ago, a year ago, a lot of folks were saying he's done. And, you know, he never said that, but other folks were just insinuating that. Never want to see that happen. I mean, it's even if he just wins one event, two events more in his career, it's more than what we thought we'd get a couple of years ago. So great to see him back. And Willie Z's back. Got to see
that too. And you do, because it's, look, we've talked a lot on this podcast over the last couple of years about how much of Will Zalatoris we've missed out on from the injuries, whether it's missing Ryder Cups, whether it's missing majors. And then he comes back and he's like the best ball striker the world has ever seen. It's good that he's healthy. You know, I hope that he can keep the game in good shape. I hope that he can stay healthy, because, you know, there's a lot of golf's past in Tiger coming back, and that's great. And I think we're all really excited about that, but it could mean very good things for golf's future, for Will Zalatoris to be healthy and contending to win big tournaments. The other big thing about Willie Z being back is it looks like he may be a broomstick putting guy now. And if that helps him figure out, you know, that 6 feet and in circle, we could be talking about a really dangerous player. I mean, how good this guy isn't lost on anyone. And obviously, you see someone that young and that talented going through all the short game woes that he's gone through, you kind of get worried about, like, all right, is this real? Is he grasping at straws? And I don't know enough to know one way or another, but, you know, he's made a change. If the long putter really works for him and this is what gets him to figure it out, like, we could be talking about really one of the best players in the world in pretty short order here, which I think would be pretty cool. So to have both of them back in the same week in a tiny event where we're going to get to watch every shot they hit every day, I mean, especially as winter's hitting, as the calendar's flipping to December, like, I can't imagine something better for golf fans.
And we got to start gearing up for the next Ryder Cup. So this this next group of, you know, young American golfers, including Willie Z, has to start tuning up now. So we're ready to go with Bethpage. We can't afford to miss it out. Europeans are already naming captains. We're already behind the gun on this one. You know they're going to want to have their first win in a long time on American soil. So start ramping up now, boys. Head down. It's a grind. Just don't mess it up.
It's crazy to me. I mean, it's not crazy to me that the Euros already said we're bringing Donald back. I don't know, after the dominant performance that he had that team put on against what I think we would all agree was an overmatched team talent-wise. Like, you know, there's no question the U.S. had the better players, and they got absolutely smacked. And clearly they think Luke Donald had something to do with that. So I understand the decision. I think it makes sense. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. What I wonder about this next Ryder Cup, though, and we talked about this a couple months ago at Ryder Cup time, is what can you learn from winning on home soil? Because since Medina, we've just had home blowout, home blowout, home blowout, home blowout, home blowout. Like, at what point is a team going to find something that they can bring across the pond? I think a lot of us thought that the U.S. had it from Whistling Straits and it was just the talent advantage. That didn't turn out to be the case. Did the Europeans figure out something in foursomes that they can carry over, in starting hot that they can carry over? Because bring Luke Donald back is great. And again, like, I don't see why you'd do anything else, but they've had plenty of captains blow out talented U.S. teams in Europe and then make nothing of it 2 years later. So do you think there's anything different here? Do you just think it was the easy, comfortable choice and they're, you know, kind of setting the intention and, you know, they're not going to make this a story later on?
No, I think they're going with a hot hand. And I don't see why you wouldn't. I mean, they, again, they were outmatched on paper, but absolutely dominated when it came to, you know, the actually winning the matches. So I think right now they think they have a good thing. I remember this is the first time they had all those guys that were on live. None of them were part of the Ryder Cup, and that was a lot of history being left behind. So they did it with some new guys. They did it with some – they took some chances on folks and young guys, and every one of them panned out. Every one of them. I mean, they played great. Not every hole, but they did what they needed to do to secure their points. So – I mean, I think one of the biggest advantages for home teams is the fact that it's so much easier to build camaraderie, to get together, to kind of still have your family life, your friends and everything else, but spend a lot of time, you know, playing with the other guys on the Ryder Cup team when you're, it's in your home country. When you, when it's overseas, I think a lot of it is, oh, you're going on vacations in between and you're doing this, you're trying to, you're finally getting a little bit of downtime from the season, which is an absolute grind. And now you want to spend some time with your family. So you're doing some fun hokey rounds here, but you know, they, from the stuff that we read, and again, we don't know what's true and what's not, there just seems to be a lot less of a fire in the American team this year to come together as a team and figure it out, where the Europeans were playing together constantly. They were still competing. They were just, you know, they built up that unity that we were lacking. I think back on home soil, that's a lot easier for these guys to do. Half of them live in Florida. So it's just getting together and playing and still do whatever. And you go home to your family and kids. You feel like you're not missing out. So I think that that is a huge advantage at the end of the day. And I think it'll still hold true in you know, the next one. But you never know, too. Just golf's such a mental game. A little bit of doubt in the Americans, a little bit of confidence in the Europeans, and things turn pretty quickly, you know? So,
yep.
Like we said it for this one, you go down that big enough on that first day, you're screwed. You're going to be screwed in this one, too, right? You can't dig yourself out of a hole with a bunch of feisty Europeans over there sinking 30-foot putts like it's their job. So it'll be a fun one. And Best Page, you're going to have a rowdy crowd. You're going to, it's a super hard golf course when they want it to be. So like, it's going to be teed up. There's not going to be, I don't think there'll be as many birdies. And I mean, you know, easy birdies and eagles that we saw last time. There's not a whole lot of drivable par fours. You know, there's some holes that I think they can score really well on, but it's just not going to be as consistent as the last one. So I don't know. I think Bethpage would be a good, you know, a great course to kind of get our mojo back.
Yeah, and I feel like the intuition, I think, is that if there's a course made for the Americans, it's Bethpage. But it also feels like there's been a kind of a convergence in the styles of the games between the two sides, especially since so many of the European guys are guys who play almost full-time on the PGA Tour. So they're used to playing this style of golf. Many of them live in the U.S., you know, they play these golf courses. They understand what it takes to score. They style their games after it. So I don't know how much of an advantage there is there as far as, you know, all right, they're going to Bethpage. That should favor the U.S. But I do think that you're hitting on something real with the crowd. I tend not to believe in like this vibes stuff. Like, I feel like either you can measure stuff or it doesn't exist a lot of the time. But there's no way that some sort of home field advantage isn't at play here beyond course setup. Like, too often we see great players go overseas, whether they're Europeans or Americans, and fold in front of opposing crowds. And if there's any place that where an American crowd should be able to strike some fear into the European team, it's Bethpage. And if they can't do it there and the U.S. manages to drop this Ryder Cup or worse, get crushed in this Ryder Cup in 2 years, like then you have to have a serious, serious investigation of like, okay, what went wrong here and what can we do differently? Because if they can't win at Bethpage with the crowd behind them that's going to be behind them and whatever advantages they can get from course setup, I don't know how they're ever going to win anywhere again.
I mean, let's see how good these guys are. You know, these Europeans are trying to chip in and get these 30-foot putts when they got bagels with a pound of cream cheese getting thrown at them, you know, every 2 seconds, you know. Bunch of crazy Mets, Yankees, Giants, Jets fans just salivating because they haven't had a big – tournament like this in a long time. So
exactly.
It's going to be fun. I, you know, for the U.S. team not to name Tiger as the next captain would be absolutely crazy. You want to get something back? Because let me tell you something. When Tiger says, hey, guys, we're going to practice, you show up, you practice. Right? We haven't had a captain like that in a long time where they almost demand that much respect. And I think Tiger could be that guy. And I know he's done the President's Cup before and, he won, but this is a different animal. I think it'd be a good test to you know, pull him in, get him involved, let him be captain, and kind of see where it goes.
Do you think it's relevant at all that Tiger wasn't really all that good in the Ryder Cup?
I don't know. I mean, I think they also made a lot of mistakes there too. I think pairing him up with Phil was always a mistake. Like, I think back then, one of the reasons we sucked was because we couldn't figure out the camaraderie part, right? Like, Tiger's a great individual player, but I think as far as a captain, I think he's also matured a lot. I think, you know, as a captain, I don't think he, unless his game totally turns around and he's 100% healthy, I don't think he put himself in as a player. I think he could really pull a group of folks together to say, hey, we're going to figure this out, right? I'm going to rent a house. We're going to live on a lake and do whatever. I feel like he's that guy that if he tells you to do something, you're going to do it, because you're not going to want to disappoint him next time you see him on the course, you know, whatever. So I feel like being a captain I think sometimes you're a much better coach than you are a player sometimes.
Sure.
I think sometimes this could be one of those things where, regardless of how he did in prior Ryder Cups, he'd be a great captain for this next team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it. I think it would, to the extent that you can make the Ryder Cup more of a must-watch event than it already is, I think that would go a long way towards doing it as well. And we know I'll have some more time on his hands, because at least this next year won't be taken up with TGL, given that the dome at Palm Beach State College in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where I just was, collapsed. So that kind of sucks. And it, like, so my understanding is it was kind of the same deal as the Metrodome in Minneapolis, which no longer exists, which is like, it was like, you know, a bubble supported by air pressure. But here's the thing. When the Metrodome collapsed, it was because there was a bunch of snow on top of it and the snow got too heavy. I don't think that happens in Florida, so I'm not totally clear on like what all went wrong here, but I do understand that I guess it was bad enough that they had to delay the league by an entire year. So that kind of sucks. I was excited to see what it means for there to be a real green that moves, like, and also is real. So I guess we'll have to wait another year for that. Conspiracy theory: this is all a cover up. None of the tech was ready and they needed an excuse to go for another year, because almost nothing that they were talking about having seems like something that actually exists.
Allegedly. Yeah. No, I just feel bad. I know there's so many people involved in this thing, and we have a couple friends that are working hard for that group. You know, that came from Golf Channel and our, you know, our past at NBC. So I hope they're able to figure it all out, because they're super excited about all this. And I think there's, you know, I'm not a skeptic in the sense of I don't think it'll work. I'm more of a skeptic, and I just really want to see what it's going to look like. I've seen all the renditions and it looks awesome. But to me, I really don't know, you know, how this is going to work with the different teams and stuff. But you know, there's a lot of really smart people involved in this thing and a lot of really creative folks. So I'm sure they'll get it together. But these kind of delays just can absolutely devastate the finances of something like this. So,
yeah, man,
I'm hoping for the best for these folks, just because, you know, I just want to see it all come together. I want to, you know, I hope it's great. I hope it's something to get us through the wintertime. To me, the more golf, the more options, the better. So, hope they figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Craig, you think, we should also talk, every so often in sports, you get just a weird injury. My favorite one of all time, I think, like, you have Kevin Brown punching a wall. That was like, I don't know, guy who might have done some steroids, might not have, gets mad, punches a wall. You're like, okay, I can see that happening. In the late aughts, Detroit Tigers closer Joel Zumaya injured his wrist playing Guitar Hero. And I think that is like potentially the greatest sports injury of all time. It ended his career, and that's insane. Jordan Spieth had a wrist injury that he then re-aggravated trying to get a toaster like off a shelf to make his kid breakfast. And like, sometimes you hear about an injury and you're like, oh no, you were partying, that's an excuse. I don't think someone could make this up. Like, I think Jordan Spieth legitimately had a toaster related wrist injury, and that it's insane to me. Like, that's ridiculous.
You know, for him, I think from what I read, that it's got something to do with nerve damage, right? I think mm-hmm. so, like, that kind of stuff, unfortunately, I think flares up with the slightest tweak of,
yeah,
you know, doing something bad. And I don't know how it happened. I don't know if it, like, the toaster was falling and he went to go position it differently or catch it. But I've done that too. When you got kids and you're just trying to do a lot of things quickly and things are moving around, and then you instinctively go to grab something and you jam your fingers and, you know, heck, I got that. So, like, you know, stuff happens. But, man, hopefully this is not a long lasting thing that kind of keeps coming back to bite them. Cause you know, I feel like nerve damage is the one thing that can flare up at any given time. Like, you just, especially with the amount of compression these guys put on the ball and everything else, that just jams everything up in your wrists and your elbows and your shoulders. So I don't know, you know, I 100% believe the fact that it was he wasn't out there partying and doing anything crazy.
Toaster induced,
you know, so good for him. I mean, at least he's back playing, so I'm psyched that he was able to figure it out. But I don't know. I don't think we've heard the last of it. Put it that way.
Yeah, I think unfortunately you're right. Good to have him in the field this week, playing with Will Zalatoris on Thursday. Not going to be a lot of, like, 4 to 7 foot putts made in that group, but that's okay. They'll do other things that we like to watch, and I don't know that this event is of much consequence aside from just us getting to watch some golfers we're excited about seeing at a, you know, time that we're not getting to play much golf. So more power to them. Glad they're back. And Hero World Challenge should be a fun one.
Yeah, no doubt. Just good. With a field this strong, it's going to be great to just watch something, right?
Absolutely.
More so than the Netflix one where they're racing down the fairway trying to get the ball on the hole as fast as they can. So it's good to watch real golf.
Yeah. So I think you might be hitting on something there with the Netflix thing, plus a lot of what Liv does, plus TGL. Like, is it possible that all these people who have this this belief that the thing that golf fans want to see is not golf are wrong? Like, if there was just more good golf to watch throughout the year, I'd watch it and it would be fun. And that's, like, that's what the designated events are great for example. But, like, a lot of the Liv marketing is, hey, come watch us for the stuff that isn't golf, or the weird stuff that we do that's, like, golf adjacent. The TGL stuff is like, hey, this isn't really golf, but we do have golfers. The Netflix thing was like, well, we have a golf show and we have a Formula One show, so, like, let's put them together and see what happens. And that was, like, weird on its own. But I don't know. Am I completely off base here? Like, it kind of feels like the thing that golf fans want is golf, but then the powers that be believe that the thing that golf fans want is, like, something that looks kind of like golf, or something that includes golf but is really about other stuff.
No, I think, I mean, look, if you're a producer and you're tasked with, hey, how do you bring in a wider audience? How do you do X, Y, and Z during the off season, right? When you know you're not going to be able to put a competitive field together. Sure. I mean, Liv is different. Liv is trying to be a competitive league against the PGA, but the rest of the stuff, I feel like it's just, hey, let's throw something out there and see if it works. Let's see how many viewers we can get. And hopefully what they're doing is saying, all right, hey, we did this Netflix thing. These holes seem to really work. These holes seem to be so clunky and kind of gimmicky that we should never do that again, right? I feel like, you know, a lot of this stuff is just trial and error. And if you look at what's working on YouTube, you got great content like the Bob the Sports guys who are just, they do their matches, but then also every once in a while they're like, hey, let's eat a taco after every hole and see what happens, right? And that gets 500,000 views in minutes. So I think they're all kind of grabbing onto that and saying, well, how do we do that? How do we replicate that onto the big screen and, you know, on a live broadcast. So it's a, I think we're going to see a lot of these things as they're trying to grow the game and figure out new avenues for this, you know, sport. I mean, look at all the indoor golf, right? For the longest time, we've had nothing. We, in the wintertime, it was just you put away your clubs, you go down south, and you hopefully get to play, you know, somewhere for a little while on some trips, or you live down south during the wintertime. Now you've got all these indoor places with thousands of golf courses to choose from. And I know they're simulators, so I get it, but you're still able to swing a club and play 18 holes on Augusta if you know the course is programmed in there and virtually walk it. So I think they're all just trying to figure out, well, what's next as technology grows and the fan base grows into other things. You know, and we've seen it out there too, with some courses have larger holes, right? Some courses, now there's part three courses out there that are really the rave. So I think everyone's just trying to glom onto something and just see what works. I think football's going through that a little bit with flag, right? Flag football has become so important now to the sport that all of a sudden it's going to become an Olympic sport, right? Who thought we'd have flag football before we had regular football? If you talked about it a couple of years ago. So
it's crazy.
We'll just, you know, you see what works. But I think hopefully what they are doing is saying, let's do some of these things never again.
There's definitely some stuff they should be crossing off the list after trying it. Yeah.
This worked. This did not, you know?
Yeah. But. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the LIV schedule. So they released the schedule for the coming year, 7 events in the US, 7 outside the US. And they have made the decision to go up against some big PGA Tour events in scheduling. Genesis is one of them. Memorial's one of them. Arnold Palmer is one of them. The Players might even be one of them. What are they doing? Because, Craig, the thing that I'm hung up on here is, in order to go head-to-head, and look, some of these events are, you know, one's in Hong Kong and one's in Florida, so you're not competing on time. That's one thing. But in order to go head-to-head in scheduling with the PGA Tour, what LIV must believe is that there's someone out there, and not just one someone, like a great mass of someones, who would prefer to watch LIV than to watch a PGA Tour designated event. You're putting a LIV event up against the Players. That is what you are saying you believe. Who is that person? Where is that person? How many of that person are there? Because this is what I can't wrap my head around. There's Glenn's thing, which is like, oh, Will, you're just xenophobic. LIV is a global tour. That's obviously not the goal here. The goal, if you're going up against the biggest events on the PGA Tour that your guys can't play in, then what you're saying is, we think we can beat you. What on earth would give LIV the belief that they can beat the PGA Tour? We've seen the ratings. They don't beat the PGA Tour when they're going up against like the modified Stableford event in Lake Tahoe. They don't beat the PGA Tour ever. Who knows if the LIV field is going to get marginally stronger or not in the coming year. I know there have been rumblings, but nothing's, you know, no shoes have dropped yet. Like, what? I'm completely baffled. Now, we know LIV isn't intended to be run intelligently as a business venture. We know they said they had almost no revenue last year, certainly no profit. We know that it's just a vehicle for the PIF to dump money into, because Yasser wants to be involved in golf in some way. But like, are they going to run it with any sense? Like, who out there is going to turn on a LIV tournament when the Players is on NBC, you know, 6 channels over or whatever? Who is that person?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for that. I mean, it's kind of a baffling decision to go head to head with some of the stuff. The only thing I can think of is that they really think they've got some big names coming over, or something's going to change differently from what they have right now as a product. Who knows if that's true or not? I don't want to speculate any more than we already have. 1,000 times on some of this stuff because I just don't know. It does seem a little crazy to me because I think, you know, there had to be other options. But, you know, they strategically did it for some reason. So, again, without more firepower coming to their side, you know, who knows? If they only keep the 3 days, maybe they figure it's not going to be so bad because maybe they steal some viewers on Friday, Saturday, and then nothing on Sunday. I don't know. It does seem a little bit odd. It does seem very odd. But I don't have a good answer for that one. They would have made life much easier for themselves and let themselves kind of grow into something more by not going head to head, right? There's so many other smaller events that they could really start to chip away at and then eventually start to go after some of the big ones once they've got some traction. I just don't think they're there yet, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm not privy to be in any of those meetings. So hopefully there's some smart folks in there doing something.
Feels to me like all they'd have to do is ask us one time and we'd handle it better than they've handled any of it. But you know, I'd have the format fixed in 45 seconds. Like it's the model's out there.
You know, again, a lot of this stuff is speculation with the whole ROM coming over, but they did say, you know, one of the big hold up for him is just, he wants to change some of the format. He wants to change, you know, the way that the LIV is viewed. So again, who knows? That could be some, you know, writer that's just making stuff up as they go along. But if that is true, you know, and I think they said they had to get all the captains to agree to it. But I would think that all the other captains now are saying, okay, well, if we're in this together, let's figure out this is our opportunity to make some changes now. Let's learn from our mistakes. But
yeah, I also don't believe any of those guys think the format's good, but
that's what I mean.
You know, we'll find out. Yeah.
I think they just need to almost get a board together.
Yeah, say, like it'd be a no brainer.
These are the 5-10 guys that move the needle. What do we need to do differently, right? Like who do we need to recruit? How do we need to change format? How do we do this? How do we do that? How do we get some of the brands back involved? Let's start building a think tank saying, you guys are getting paid a lot of money. Let's make this work for everybody. But I don't know if they're doing that. So
yeah. And I've said this before on this podcast, like the format to me, maybe there are people out there who can tolerate it. The format to me is so bad that I find it hard to fathom just how many top tier guys would need to go over to LIV for me to have a better experience watching it than watching a PGA Tour tournament. And I think we've talked plenty, and if we haven't, plenty of golf podcasts out there have talked plenty about how miserable the PGA Tour TV product often is. So that's saying something. Like, having a structural thing like that stand in the way of your league that is already challenged in distribution and notoriety and recognition and legitimacy is just so like dumb and unnecessary. So yeah, you're exactly right. If they get a board together and they make some format changes that are just so obvious and sitting out in front of them, then, you know, bringing over additional big names and stuff can actually move the needle and make a difference. But you know, LIV is the textbook example to me of an entity that can't get out of its own way, which is ironic considering LIV exists because the PGA Tour has such a difficult time getting out of its own way. It's like it's endemic to anyone who's running a golf tour is like, well, we're going to do a pretty bad job of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard too when you think of all like the other leagues that have struggled to go against like major leagues, like right, the XFLs, the USFL, like all these other leagues in football, to try to go head to head with the NFL has never worked, right? So it's not to say that they didn't put together a good product. It's just for some reason it didn't grab the fans' attention like they initially had hoped. And I think that's what LIV is going to struggle with until they start to make some real changes. And I mean, the amount, if they are able to get a ROM and one or two other folks, now they'll have a good 15 really quality big names. Now they all got to play well. But you know, I feel like they'd be going the right direction. The weirder part is if this merger goes through, how long is it even going to last? Like, how, I thought,
yeah,
what is it going to become in a year or two, right? So, like, I don't know. It's signing all these long-term deals. Just, I don't know where it's all going. Unless, I don't know. Again, that'd just be speculation. But I don't know. It'll be a really interesting season to see how all this shakes out.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't make sense. Craig, I think we got to get to what was, I'm sure, a big moment in your life over the weekend. Michigan beat Ohio State for the third year in a row. And because Michigan ducked the game in 2020 because they pretended everyone had COVID, it has now been 5 seasons since Ohio State beat Michigan in one of these games, which is pretty crazy. Michigan, as I said, has won 3 in a row. Do you know the last time that Michigan beat Ohio State in 3 consecutive years?
Oh, geez. No, I'd have no idea.
It was actually more recent than I thought it was going to be. It was 95-97, and Michigan, of course, won their only national championship since World War II in 1997. Now, that is a disputed national championship split with Nebraska, but you know, just had to point that out. But really, the run that Michigan has gone on, illegitimate as some of it may or may not be, as look, whether it is or not, a lot of people are going to treat it like significant portions of this run were ill-gotten, and Michigan is just going to have to live with that. But the run that they have gone on in these past 3 seasons, almost certainly barring a spectacular collapse, going to go to their third college football playoff, this one with probably their best chance to win a national championship that they've had in any of these years, is really impressive when you consider where they were in 2020, how Harbaugh was perceived, the notion that they couldn't, you know, develop a quarterback who could play at this level, the notion that their defense wouldn't be good enough. I mean, even the, like, you know, Chase Winovich, Rashawn Gary defense of a couple years before that had failed to beat Notre Dame and then pretty much collapsed against Ohio State at the end of the season. So the way that they remade the program effectively after the 2020 season, while simultaneously standing by Harbaugh when everyone was calling for his head and begging any NFL team to pick him up, is really impressive. The question I have for you, though, is Jim Harbaugh has been suspended for half this season for 2 different infractions. And Jerome Moore has beaten 1 kind of questionably good team in Penn State and 1 very good team in Ohio State, a more talented team than Michigan, which is hard to do in college football, is beat a team that's more talented. Has Jerome Moore showed us that Harbaugh doesn't actually matter for this team?
No, I think Harbaugh is still a great college head coach. He's a great recruiter. He may be quirky, but he knows how to get people motivated. He knows how to he's still able to connect with players, obviously, because he's built this thing that, I mean, Michigan was really struggling for a long time once Lloyd Carr left. So, I mean, it's not as easy as coming in. And you saw this in Notre Dame when Lou Holtz left, right? It's like,
sure,
how do you take a college like this, which is almost considered like one of the best franchises in the world, and say, or best companies in the world, I should say, not really a franchise, but, and let it fall apart? Well, it happens, right? Like, it just, you lose a little bit of recruiting momentum. You start to lose a couple games. You make one bad hire. Yeah, you fall short to a couple of folks in, you know, within your big rivalries. And before you know it, recruits stop wanting to go there. And then before you know it, like, the funding stops coming in for some of the stuff, right? And it just, you start to lose your TV deals because you became irrelevant. Florida State's gone through it. I mean, a lot of big schools have really gone through this. I think Harbaugh, you got to give him, love him or hate him, give him credit for building this thing and really surrounding himself by some great coaches too. Because I don't believe they're a better team without him. But it's great to see. There's not a whole lot of teams that can do what Michigan did this year without your head coach, right? The guy who recruited everyone, the guy who kind of puts a game plan together, the guy who is the glue to hold everything, you know, together when you really need it.
Well, I think the guy who puts the game plan together actually resigned amid a sign stealing investigation, but we'll put that to the side.
Allegedly. Jeez. But you know, they've done everything they possibly could do to Michigan and Harbaugh this year. The Big Ten has, and they were still, they battled through it all. Right? And I don't know. Saturday was a great day. I at one point at the end, I thought they were going to blow it because I really wanted them to.
I thought they were too. I thought
Michigan should have tried to, you know, go for the touchdown at the end of the game. And when they played it a little bit safe, I'm like, that's going to come back and haunt them. Luckily, they threw the, you know, Ohio State threw the interception because they were moving fast. They were all of a sudden they were in prime position to, you know, take back that game. And I thought we were going to lose by one, but they didn't. Michigan held on, give them a ton of credit. Awesome day. And then it was followed by four or five other amazing game, college football
games. Oh, my gosh, man.
The Washington comeback at the end, the Alabama comeback. I mean, it was just – it was one after another. And there were big, big name teams that were losing to, you know, rivals that were five or six losses into the season. And all of a sudden –
yeah,
nowhere,
Washington State's not going to a bowl game. Auburn, I don't think, is going to a bowl game. Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible. It was just –
yeah, Auburn, who was coming off a loss to New Mexico State, has Alabama within, you know, an inch of its life.
Fourth and 31.
So talk to me about this fourth and 31 play, Craig. My understanding is that Auburn rushed two guys and had a spy. Why they had a spy on fourth and 31, I don't understand. But I've heard a lot of commentary about how anyone can draw up a play to beat two rushers. What I don't understand about that, though, is everyone knows this ball needs to fly into the end zone, and you have eight guys back there. It can't be that easy to beat eight guys with five guys, right? Like, how did Isaiah Bond get open in the corner with eight guys back there? Is it some colossal coverage bust? Is it actually easy to plan against when your quarterback is going to have that much time? Like, walk me through the schemes you have going on there.
So give Alabama credit. It was a perfect throw and an incredible catch, right? Yeah. I mean, it was dropping the football right in the bucket from 31 yards away. It was just perfect. With that said, should never have gotten that close. I mean, it was 31 yards isn't a Hail Mary per se, but it is as close as to a Hail Mary as they could have had. Yes. Do I think they should have rushed more people? Absolutely. I don't think they needed to spy at that point because you have enough people in the end zone where if the quarterback gets out, they needed a touchdown, right? So if they did get past your four linemen or five, you know, players, you had plenty of people back there to make the stop, you know, when it was needed. And then in the coverage side, there was two guys just floating in the middle, not doing anything. I mean, so you, there's only so many receivers out there, right? He's not looking off a lot of them. So at one point he's looking at the side of the field he's going to throw to. You should have had three guys over in that corner trying to deflect that ball, right? Like in a typical Hail Mary play, you, it's almost like a swarm. Now, if you got batted around and the guy caught it in the miraculous play, whatever, that's, you know, that there's only so much you could do. It's a, you know, miracle. But that was just a phenomenal play and a phenomenal catch in some really crummy defense because you should have had three guys with your heels on the front of the end zone saying nobody gets past you. And when they do, they're going to swirl, stay in your zone. And then everyone else floated the ball right at that point. And again, to your earlier point, there's only so many receivers that can throw it. So you have the whole end zone covered. That's all you had to protect. They could have gotten down to the half yard line. You didn't give a crap. The game is over.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I you never want to doubt a defensive coach, especially in college football with, you know, I'm sure they're great at what they do, but that was just a poorly, poorly executed last play.
Man. And we were robbed of what was going to be a phenomenal field storming too.
Oh,
like that was going to be so good.
Yeah. And it just, and it would have really, so the good news is Alabama winning makes Georgia Alabama so much more interesting, right? If Alabama lost, they would have been playing the, they would have been playing just for the upset because they're out of the playoffs regardless. They would have had two losses. Really, all they wanted to do now is just not lose to Georgia. With the one loss, the whole college football playoff scenario is totally up for grabs in a lot of ways, right? Georgia loses.
Yeah, it's a playing game for them.
If Georgia loses, where do they go? Do they fall out of the top four? That's kind of a crazy statement, but it could happen, I guess. If Michigan beats Iowa, which they should do, you know, they should be a lock. If they lose, they're out. Then that'd be interesting because Ohio State and Michigan would both be out. Oregon, Washington, if Washington wins, right? Oregon's out. That's easy enough to say because Washington's undefeated. If Florida State wins, there's, you know, your four right there. But if you know, it gets crazy. If Georgia loses, who gets bumped in? Does Texas then supersede Alabama because they beat them head-to-head and they're a higher, you know, ranked
Texas
team?
Texas is probably going to be a one-loss conference champion, right?
That's like, most likely. So,
but my Alabama question is, they did. My question is, Texas is ranked behind Ohio State right now.
Yeah.
What does a win by Texas over Oklahoma State show us? Does that tell us anything more about Texas? If Texas beats Oklahoma State, whether they beat them by 3 or 30 this weekend, do we know more about Texas than we do today? I don't think so. So I'm very confused by what they're doing behind Ohio State. Like, is there a scenario where one loss Texas is left out, Georgia win or Georgia loses, and Michigan wins and Washington wins and I don't know, Florida State wins? Like, or no, Georgia loses, Michigan wins, Washington wins. Now you have Georgia, Michigan, Washington, and Alabama. I think a win over Georgia probably does more for Alabama than losing to Texas in Jalen Milroe's like second start. Like, this could get chaotic, but if I'm a Texas fan, I am very worried about what I am doing sitting back there behind Ohio State, because like if they don't think your resume is better than Ohio State's now, I don't know what beating Oklahoma State's going to do for you.
Yeah, I mean, you and I debated about this earlier in the year, and I think you told me there's never more than four teams that are really in contention. I think this proves there are a good seven teams right now.
No. You are misrepresenting what I said. What I said is once you get to the four-team playoff, there has not been a deserving team left out. That's what I said. And maybe it happened once. Maybe it happened once in 2014 before the Big 12 figured out that they should just play a championship game. But like the only one-loss conference champion, the only other, I guess, one-loss conference champion that's ever been left out was Ohio State when they lost 49-20 to either Iowa or Purdue. Like, look, every single number five team has either had two losses, lost to a playoff team, or been blown out by a terrible team. That's been the case every time. So right now, Oregon is number five. What do they have? A loss to a current playoff team, Washington. So Ohio State, number six, has a loss to a current playoff team, Michigan. Texas is... if Texas is a one-loss conference champion and they get left out because, you know, one of Oregon and Washington gets in, Georgia gets in, Michigan gets in, and Florida State wins, that would kind of suck. But you know what Texas shouldn't have done then? They shouldn't have lost to an Oklahoma team that couldn't beat Kansas. Like,
yeah, but
they'd be the most deserving team that's ever been left out. I would say that.
But how crazy is it that now we're bagging on teams that have one loss to their whole college season, right? Like, I get
it. Well, we've basically counted out Alabama. They only have one loss.
No, I'm not though. I'm saying that this year there are seven teams that legitimately, even if we have a loss, like Ohio State losing and not making the playoffs this year is an absolute travesty. I don't want to face
it.
I think it is because if you have a chance to win the national championship, you should somehow be in that playoff race. And
the point is, let's say
you lost
let's
to
say,
a really close team.
That's the point. They played the game. They played a playoff team and they lost. Let's say that next year, when the Big Ten expands, they don't protect any rivalries. And instead of on Thanksgiving weekend, Michigan and Ohio State playing, they play in the first round of the expanded playoff. It's an elimination game then. Just because we're calling it the college football playoff, it's better. Ohio State did have a chance to win the national championship, whether they beat Notre Dame or lost to Notre Dame. And that was a very nice win that they had. They were going to go to Michigan at the end of the year with a chance to be the Big Ten champion. And by winning the Big Ten East, they were going to punch their ticket to the college football playoff. What they failed to do was win the Big Ten East. As a result, they got eliminated by a college football playoff team from the college football playoff. Why does it matter if the game is played on November 25th or on January 1st? Ohio State got their shot at playing a playoff team and they lost. What more do we need to know about them? Why should it have to happen twice?
If you look at last year, Michigan beat Ohio State in, you know, during the regular season and put on a much better playoff showing than Michigan did, right? They almost beat Georgia. So like at the end of the day, I look at it differently. Regular season is regular season, right? Until you start calling it playoffs, it's just like for me in the NFL, right? You can have a 7-5 team going into, you know, whatever your playoffs are. And all of a sudden saying, oh, shoot, you know what? They're on a hot streak and they've won their last seven games. And now they're the team to beat going into whatever. I feel the same way for college football. There's 7 or 8 teams that are really going to put on a great show in a playoff situation.
But why do you care when the elimination game happens? That's what I can't wrap my head around. Ohio State got to play an elimination game.
If you're going to have a playoff, you got to have a regular season and you got to delineate the two, right? The one qualifies you to get into the playoffs.
But they did
in the playoffs, and when you're in the playoffs, that's a team that should have a legitimate shot at winning the championship. And
so,
I think there's
so how bad should we allow that team to be in the regular season if they're as talented as Ohio State? Because really, what you're arguing is Ohio State has a really talented team, and they can beat most, if not all, teams in the country at some point. They won't do it all the time, but they have like a coin flips-ish chance around that of beating any team that they play, especially, you know, neutral site in a dome, whatever. That's your argument, right? What if Ohio State had lost to Notre Dame and lost to Michigan? Because they were within a play of doing both of those things. They also would have been within a play of winning both those games. Would a 2-loss Ohio State still deserve a shot at playing in the college football playoff because they're that talented and they can just beat anyone? Like, do you not have to prove anything in the regular season?
No, if you still qualify and you get, you know, your top 17 or top 18, yeah, then yes, you do qualify to be in the playoffs, right? And that's how it happens. That's just how football is. You can't judge it off of one play all the time. But you've got to delineate the difference between a regular season and a playoff. And you're counting the regular season as a playoff, you know, and it's not. It's a qualifying to get into the playoffs. But right now, 4 is too small of a sample size for me.
All I'm asking, this is the 10th, right? It's the 10th iteration of the college football playoff. Find me the deserving team that got left out. Find me the team that proved beyond a doubt that it should be in that group that got left out. You can't do it.
We're going to have 3 this year.
So are we, though?
Yeah.
How? Talk me through it.
Because if Ohio State just doesn't make it, if Georgia wins, Michigan wins, Washington wins, Florida State wins, great. That's awesome. But okay, to say that Ohio State and Texas shouldn't be in a playoff race is crazy to me. They're that good of teams where you only have one loss. You lost a really close game to playoff teams. It's crazy to think that these teams need to be absolutely perfect. And that's why they all start tanking their seasons, because they're also worried about having two or three losses. So Michigan plays nobody till it gets to the very end, and it sucks. But,
Ohio State, look, Texas in that scenario, I agree. They are a one-loss conference champion who lost a rivalry game at a neutral site to a good team. I do not
Ohio State.
Let me get there. I do not think that that team should be left out. Ohio State would not have a conference championship. Feel like that matters. And they would have already played an elimination game against a playoff team and lost. If they had played that game and we had called it the college football playoff, and then Ohio State didn't get to go on and get a second chance at playing for the national championship, you'd say, ah, well, that's just how the cookie crumbles. But because we called it the regular season, you're going, man, how can we have a team this good that gets left out? You know what? The way you have a team that good that gets left out is you have better teams. That's the bottom line. You have more deserving teams.
But you're saying that's my biggest problem. Should the top four be the top four? Yeah, absolutely. But
more often than not in the college football playoff era, there have been
eight teams that qualify for playoffs in college.
More often than not in the college football playoff era, there have not even been four deserving teams. Notre Dame was one of them in 2020. Notre Dame beat a shorthanded Clemson team 47-40 in double overtime at home. They then had to play that same Clemson team in the ACC championship, which I object to. And they lost 34-10 or 31-10 or something like that. And then because everyone else sucked and Notre Dame had this win over Clemson, not quarterbacked by Trevor Lawrence from like a month and a half prior, they got to go to the playoff. And what happened? They got smacked by Alabama. And how did we know that was going to happen? Because Notre Dame had already proven that it wasn't better than a playoff team at full strength. You know what Ohio State proved to us on Saturday? That they're not better than a playoff team at full strength. You know why Louisville won't suddenly deserve to make it into the college football playoff if they beat Florida State? Because they're not beating a playoff team at full strength, and because they lost to Pitt and Kentucky, but we'll ignore that for now. Like, the bottom line is, what did TCU do last year? TCU lost their conference championship game last year. There's just nobody deserving. That's how Ohio State got a second shot last year, because there was just nobody who was all that good. Sometimes you have years where nobody's all that good. Sometimes you have years where there are more good teams. But I would say it's probably more likely than not, because I don't think Florida State is going to win, and I don't think Florida State can win the national championship. So, like, look, if it were me, I'd just write off Florida State. You can't put Florida State without Jordan Travis after the way they played against an awful Florida team with a backup quarterback last week in the college football playoff. You can't do it. You just had a game end 65-7, the most recent college football playoff game ended 65-7. If Florida State is number four and they have to play this Georgia team or this Michigan team, if Georgia loses, they are going to get historically annihilated, worse than they did in 2014 against Oregon, worse than what happened to TCU last year, potentially. Like, that team should not be in the college football playoff. So that's how I would solve it. No deserving team is going to get left out if you just write off Florida State. But what I do think is an interesting question is, if Washington loses to Oregon, Washington will be one loss. They will not have a conference championship. But the difference between them and Ohio State is they will have beaten every team on their schedule, because they already beat Oregon. And that's what the Pac-12 system has that the Big Ten system doesn't have. Michigan and Ohio State, if we really wanted to figure this out, we could have them play again this week. What would you say then? If Ohio State lost by 6 points to Michigan again in Indianapolis this week, would they still be so good that they deserve a chance at the national championship? Like, what is your bar? Because as far as I can tell, it's just the date on the calendar.
No, not at all. You got to get to that point on the calendar, but you got to separate the two. playoffs are playoffs. Regular season's regular season, right? And college,
but plenty of teams, you would acknowledge, you would acknowledge that plenty of teams, like, why doesn't Notre Dame deserve a spot in the playoff?
Because they suck.
Exactly. So teams can do disqualifying things during the regular season that show they don't belong in the playoffs. But why is losing to a playoff team? Losing to a playoff team is the thing that eliminates you from the college football playoff. So why doesn't that apply to Ohio State?
Game in the season, especially in a really tight game too, like one of the top scenes where it's just one, the ball bounces one way or another.
How many games did Michigan lose last year?
None until the playoffs.
Yeah. How many games did they lose in total?
One.
And did some weird stuff happen in that game?
Yeah, but that's okay. It's
exactly, Craig. So if it happens in January and you lose one game and some weird stuff happens, but nothing else, you didn't lose anywhere else in the season, suddenly it's fine that that eliminates you from the national championship conversation. But if you do it in November, you deserve another chance?
Welcome to the real world. Do you not watch the NFL? Do you not watch baseball? Like, it just, I mean, all these play, all these leagues that have regular season and then the playoffs, there's a delineation, right? Crap happens throughout the season. But if you still are good enough to qualify for the playoffs, it's a clean slate across the board. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. It's a clean slate. All I'm saying is four teams is too small of a sample size. And I think opening up the portal.
And I'm asking you to find.
I think we're going to see more teams start to rise to go. I don't know if we're going to get these, you know, these Georgia teams like we have in the past that have just absolutely dominated with 20 kids going in the draft, the first three rounds of the draft, like we have in the past. I think it's going to be, I think you're going to see a lot more competition.
Craig, this would be like, I can't even describe to you what a great argument this would be if we had ever seen the scenario that you're talking about play out in the playoff era. You are chasing ghosts. You are attacking a problem that we've never had.
We've always had that one dominant team. You could have done away with the playoffs the last 5 years, maybe 10.
Yeah, I've been saying we need to bring back the BCS. You're right. Like, we should bring back, or just go back to the polls. We didn't need the playoff to tell us Georgia's the best team.
I don't think you could do that this year. And I think if you threw some of these other teams in the mix, it'd be a lot more interesting for the fans to watch. That's all I'm saying. Four teams isn't enough for a college playoff.
So here's a fair question then. How much would you have cared about the result of Saturday's game if it were an 8-team playoff?
You'd still care because you'd still want to.
How much?
I'd care a ton.
Because what you knew, whether you're willing to admit it or not, what you knew about Saturday's game was that it was a play-in game for the playoff. You can't tell me that those stakes didn't mean something.
Of course it meant something, but it was also the biggest rivalry throughout the year. So even if there were no playoffs, it would have meant just as much to me. Yes. You don't think Ohio State, Michigan is a big game?
I think Ohio State, Michigan is a big game. I think it's insane.
In college football.
I think Ohio State, Michigan is a very big game. When was the last time before these last few years? When was the last time the Ohio State Michigan game meant as much as this one did? Maybe it was the 2016 game that went to overtime and JT Barrett was or wasn't short. Both teams were very highly ranked then. Maybe it was 2006, the Chad Henne, Troy Smith game. It's not a coincidence, Craig, that the times when really good teams play each other and there are postseason implications, those games are bigger. We all understand all the time that there are disqualifying things you can do in the regular season. I don't understand. I cannot wrap my head around how you're coming to this point that, so they lost to a playoff team, which is the thing that eliminates you from national championship contention when you do it in the playoff, but it's not disqualifying because they didn't do it in the playoff. And I can't, for the life of me, understand how you're saying that if you reduce the stakes on the Michigan Ohio State game, it would be just as important. By definition, it would not.
Why you wouldn't want more teams, like a bigger playoff picture for college football?
Because I want the regular season to matter.
It does matter. It always will matter.
Michigan could have lost to Ohio State and Penn State this year, the only consequential regular season games that they played, and made the playoff if it were a 12-team playoff, which is what it's going to be next year.
But two losses wouldn't have been good enough.
In the 12-team format, two losses absolutely would have been good enough. Missouri's in the top 10, dude.
No. I'm not saying 12. I'm saying 8.
Well, 12 is what we're going to have.
I know, but I'm saying 8. I wanted a bigger picture. You asked me what I wanted. Like, I want 8 teams. I think there's going to be 8 teams that would be a great playoff scenario.
Okay, so 8 teams, no matter what happens on Saturday, Michigan and Ohio State both make the playoff. It would have already been decided. That sucks. I don't understand how you can't see that sucks. You take all the stakes away from the game. It's just the bragging rights and the rivalry at that point. It doesn't do anything for either team. They're both playing in the playoff. That's terrible. It's awful.
I know. I just love football. Sorry, buddy. I don't know what to tell you. I love football.
You sound like someone who hates football. You don't want the games to matter.
No, I do want it to matter, but I want more in the playoffs. Right now, the championship sucks. It sucked for the last 10 years. That hasn't been a
good thing. Greg, why do you think that is? That's because there aren't enough good teams.
Yeah.
The talent is too concentrated.
I don't think that's the case.
There aren't enough teams that can win.
I don't think that's the case this year.
It might not be the case this year.
You dropped it back into 10 years ago. I'm talking about this year. I'm talking about this year. That's all I'm talking about. You keep bringing up shit from 10, 20 years ago. I'm talking about this season.
Craig, I'm bringing up shit from Saturday, dude.
And I'm telling you, this season, there are 7 really good teams that could walk away with a national championship if they made it to the playoffs. That's all
whoa. You think any of these 7 teams could win the national championship?
Yeah. You don't think Texas could?
You think Florida State could beat Georgia?
Florida State.
Oregon could beat Georgia?
Yes. I don't think Florida State. I think Oregon has.
Oh, my gosh. No, Craig, look, you are in for a reality check. I hate to say this. I really hate to do this to you, but all you need to know, the only thing you need to know ever about the college football playoff is this. It's very simple. It is almost always true. You look at the matchups, and this year there will be 2 of them, 2 semifinals, and one team is going to have some number of 5 stars on the roster, and the other team is going to have fewer. And the team that's going to win is the team with more 5 stars because they're playing in a neutral site in a dome. And that's the only thing that matters. I promise you, this is exactly what will happen. That is why every playoff result that we've ever seen happens. People thought TCU was going to win that game last year, and they lost 65-7 because Georgia was a roster full of 5-star players who were going to the NFL, and TCU was a roster full of guys who got to play a Big 12 schedule.
This is not the same Georgia team. That's all I'm saying.
This might not be the same Georgia team, but I don't think that – what did Georgia beat Oregon by Labor Day weekend 2022? 56-7, 62-3, whatever it was. I don't think that gap closed. I got to say, I don't think that gap closed.
I'm telling you, any given Sunday or Saturday in this case for college football, you never know. I thought
it was 49-3. Sorry, it wasn't 56-7. It was 49-3. I'm sorry.
By the way,
I apologize.
Michigan got a better team than TCU last year, and they got their butts kicked. They just got outplayed. On paper, Michigan was a much better team than TCU.
Did Michigan not squander like every possible opportunity they had?
It happens. That's my whole point, Will. It happens.
But Craig, that's like basically the first upset in the history of the college football playoff. Yeah. Second of all, what happened to that TCU team in their next game? Can you remind me? I don't remember what happened when they played Georgia.
And Georgia barely got past Ohio State, who shouldn't have been in there anyway. If you look at it, they had their one loss against Michigan. So according to you, they shouldn't have been in the playoffs anyway.
That's not what I said.
Yeah, it is.
No, I said that it's fair to exclude a team that has a loss to a playoff team. I never said it has to disqualify you. There wasn't another more deserving team than Ohio State last year. But if they had already lost to a playoff team and they got left out because someone else won their conference championship, I don't think that would be a problem.
Let's move on. This is getting exhausting. You keep twisting your words back and forth to make this work for you. And we are never going to agree on this.
Yeah. And then look, all I need is when the playoff expands next year and no regular season game means anything and the best team still wins the national championship, I'm going to be right and you're going to be wrong. And it's going to be the same as it is today. You're just going to realize it.
I strongly disagree. Well, 12 is going to dilute the whole thing. It should never be 12.
Okay. All right. Last thing we got to touch on before we finish here is the worst football game I think I've ever watched. And I watched some of that Virginia Tech Wake Forest 3-0 game from like 2015. The Giants and the Patriots played, and it was disgusting. Mac Jones is clearly not an NFL player. I don't know if the Patriots missed that last kick on purpose, but I don't know that they could have made it if they were trying either. They're such a hapless team this year. Tommy DeVito is ruining the Giants' future by saving their season. Like, how do you process all this?
I don't know. I was at the game, believe it or not.
No.
It was horrible.
Oh my gosh.
It was an absolute punk fest. It sucked because you're there with our family. We're there with another family, and the kids had a great time. They always do when you go to the game. But at the end of the day, it was cold. It started to rain.
It looked gross.
Painful football to watch. But at the end of the day, people got to remember too, if you blow all these games, you lose the locker room, you're not getting free agents, you show like they're going to want to turn over coaching staff. So like these guys are damned if they do, damned if they don't. Like I get it. Yep. We're losing places on the draft. It's a really strong quarterback draft, but it's also a really strong tackle draft coming out. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, the Giants will be okay either way. If they had a shot at number one or number two, great, go for it. But at the end of the day, they have a chance of winning two more games this season. Not saying they definitely will, but they have a chance to win another, you know, two games this year. They're just not great. They're just not playing great. Their defense played awesome. I know the Patriots aren't great by any means, but the defense is playing really strong.
Special bad, I think.
Yeah. So like, it is what it is. If the Giants walked away with two wins this year, like everybody wanted, once they started to really play poorly, I mean, hell, it's, you know, the coaching would be all turned over. The GM would be on the hot seat again. All the players would be revolting. It would be an absolute disaster. We just can't go through a total rebuild again. It's been 10 years. So we got to figure something out. And there's too many good players in this team to be this crummy. So, I think they'll get it together. I think, again, you look at it, should have won the Bills game, should have won the Jets game. Six wins right now is a wild card spot. Plus two more very winnable games. Would we have gone very far in the playoffs? Absolutely not. We would be that 12 seed in college football where it's just like, hey, you're in it to show up, knowing you're going to get your butts kicked. But, they would have made the playoffs again. That's just more of the NFC East right now, or NFC right now is pretty piss poor besides the top four teams.
I think the thing to keep in mind about the Giants and the Patriots as well is they've had a number of close losses. You know, the Patriots lost to the Eagles by 5, the Dolphins by a touchdown, the Raiders by 4, Commanders by 3, Colts by 4, Giants by 3. It's not a coincidence that you lose those close games when you've scored the fewest points in football. And the Giants are right in there with them. The Patriots have scored 148. The Giants have scored 159. The difference between those teams is, although the Giants have kind of turned it around on defense lately, the Giants have also given up, like, I think the most points. No, not quite the most. The fourth most in the league.
We haven't even played the Eagles yet. That's mostly to Dallas.
Yeah, that's scary. Dallas, I think Dallas, it is. It's a lot to Dallas.
This is combined by themselves. So,
yeah, and Dallas, by beating up on the Giants and Commanders, has the best point differential in the NFL. But I gotta say, it's embarrassing what has happened to the Patriots. The Giants, I feel like you can tell yourself the story easier. Look, they invested in Jones, they invested in Saquon, they're still holes on their roster, you know, they were doing things with payroll, you know, it's been transitional, they were able to have a good year last year, but like with the Patriots, it's very clear that they've had nothing since Brady left, and they have not been able to put competent skill players around their quarterbacks. They have not been able to develop a quarterback who can play competently in the NFL. You saw that firsthand with the Mac Jones experience on Sunday. I don't know where they go from here. They're going to have a high pick in the draft, but I may have mentioned this before on this podcast. Like, unless you want to throw up, don't look at the Patriots draft history. It's like Dante Hightower and Matthew Slater, and that's it. Especially if you limit yourself to the first couple of rounds. So even having a high pick doesn't do anything for my confidence in this team. I don't know where they go from here, but holy cow, things are bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, I know they're, in theory, Belichick's back for a couple of years, but I don't know how long that's going to last. There's already a ton of rumors out there that he's going somewhere else. So I don't know if they try and trade for, you know, draft picks or whatever. You know, if I'm the Giants, what I would do, I would trade one of my second round picks and a fourth round pick to try and get Hooker out of Detroit, because I think when he was healthy, he was a hell of a quarterback. He's now back off surgery, and he's playing again, and he's still on their practice squad, you know, whatever. There's not practice squad, probably. He's probably on their roster, so no one scoops him up. But I would take a shot there, and in the draft grab a receiver and a tackle and some defensive players and, you know, whatever else you need to do. But I'd rather see something like that than you're not going to get May, you're not going to get Williams, because they're going to be gone by the time you pick. I do like the kid from Daniels from LSU, but you know, there's a reason a lot of folks are saying that he may not be the guy, but you know, historically, the top one or two quarterbacks that are selected don't do great, right? So like, you can have a top 10 pick somewhere and still top 15 pick, and you just got to be smarter with how you do it, and you'll find the players. Giants just haven't drafted well over the years. So just like New England, they haven't drafted well. So you can't build a team off of a, you know, sprinkling of free agents and a bunch of guys that aren't only on your team for 2 or 3 years and they're gone. So, you know, the teams like Philadelphia drafted really well, and then they were really smart with how they picked up free agents. Can't say that for the Giants. You can't say that for New England either. So I think this year is going to be a telling year. I think you got to give the GM, you got to give the head coach another year. You know, my biggest problem this year with them is they just didn't look prepared in the beginning of the season. So I don't know what they did this year, but they better do something different next year. I don't know. I think the Giants end up with 6 wins this year and kind of somewhere in the top 10 draft pick, you know.
Hendon Hooker, fully 8 months younger than Daniel Jones, even though Daniel Jones is in his like fourth year in the NFL. Hendon Hooker has had one NFL practice. Craig, we went on a little long here because I had to educate you on how college football works. But as we get stuff wrapped up here, that's a pretty sweet One Club Short hoodie you've got on for this podcast.
This is the OG.
We had some sweet Black Friday sales, Cyber Monday running. What should people know if they want to get some of that swag?
Yeah, we're going to continue on with some major discounts throughout the holiday season. We really want to clear house just to, you know, free up some room for new inventory for next year. But we've got great stuff, especially for the wintertime. We've got quarter zips. We've got a whole different array of hoodies. So, hop on it. And then, especially for the holidays, we've got head covers, we've got towels, we've got great stocking stuffers for, anyone in the family that loves golf. So, get in there, start shopping. The discount code's in there on our Instagram account. Ping us if you need any help. We'll help you with sizing.
I've been rocking the brown leather one club short head cover from the member package this year.
Yeah.
People like that a lot. It's love a hit. So highly recommend. All right. As we get things wrapped up here, you can always find any information you want pretty much at oneclubshort.com. If it's not there, it's on Instagram. We're at one club short. We are at one club short. And then the number one on Twitter, given that Tiger, Spieth and Willie Z are all back this week. We'll be active there. You can find us on YouTube where we're at One Club Short Pod. You can find me in my weekly trashing of Liv on the podcast on the One Club Short TikTok. We're really anywhere you're looking, we're there. So, all right, Craig, right before we finish here, any parting shots?
No, let's have a great college football weekend. So many good games. Be interesting to see how it all shakes out. It'll be a lot of feelings hurt regardless.
Lot of feelings hurt. And we'll be back to recap it all, similar time, similar place, here in a week or two. Till then, thanks everyone for listening.